Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Well, hello, my wonderful audience. My life's been really exciting around here, communicating with the most amazing people on our radio TV show, the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. And again, I want to thank Gary Null for giving me the opportunity to keep my radio show on PRN.FM, which he owns, and allowing me to use that same time to video and to put my weekly TV show up on YouTube. And it's doing wonderfully. And I've got interviews with the most important people in medicine today who are taking on the proper treatment in defiance of the CDC, the NIH, and the FDA. Inexpensive treatments that work for COVID-19, you know, and those inexpensive treatments are such a threat to the powers that be. They just want their vaccines, they want their junky but expensive medicines. So I'm just real proud of what we're doing, and I couldn't be any prouder than having Leah Wilson on. Leah has been on the show before, and she's the co-founder, and I think you're like the executive director or something, of Stand for Health Freedom. And what you are doing is so inventive. When I tell people about you, they say, oh my goodness, I've been telling a lot of people about you. And I urge people in the field to get in touch with you. And it's just astonishing. I'd like you to tell people again, they may not have heard or remember from our previous talk, what you're doing. And in particular, this panel that I was on just a few days ago, where you filmed some of the most interesting people in the field of COVID-19, and what you're going to do with that film. You're turning that into a
a documentary?
Oh, is it going to be a documentary?
Well, it's been thrown around. We haven't committed to that. But
a petition. You use
a campaign. We've turned it into a campaign.
So, So tell us about everything, because I know that, you've put us in touch with a filmmaker since then. So tell us what you're doing, Leah Wilson. You are an astonishing human being. And I look forward to getting to know your husband. And I met your co-founder, Sayer G. We're such a tight community. He's known about me for very well. And he's married to the marvelous psychiatrist, Kelly Brogan, whom I've known for years and had her on my radio shows. I got to get back in touch with Kelly. We're a community, folks. And that's a part what this show is going to be about. This show is going to be about how wonderful it is to be brave enough to choose your own personal freedom and then to stand up for the freedom of people in the United States, because we are at a cusp. I think we're at a cusp that is kind of like part of the wave of what it takes, the War of Independence, the Civil War. I think we're at a cusp now where it's, again, life or death, freedom in America and freedom in the world. And I just want to say that I believe that becoming someone who stands up for what you truly believe brings you into a whole new wonderful world, world of Kelly Brogan, of the world of Leah Wilson, and just wonderful people. So I want to give it over to you now to just talk about whatever you want, and we're going to move in the direction, folks, of finding the courage at this critical moment Because there is something absolutely gorgeous and liberating about saying, I want to do what I believe in, and that includes taking the risk of standing up for America and freedom.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bregan. It's always an honor to be with you, and your high praise feels so undeserved, but I appreciate it. So yes, we were here a month or so back talking about Stand for Health Freedom, but just to refresh some of you, we are a grassroots action center because we noticed a few years back through reporting on informed consent and vaccine issues, you know, issues that really speak to the heart of how people can care for their own bodies and how they can bring up their own children. And we were seeing how many people cared about this, but didn't know how to use their voice. And should that be the ultimate barrier to showing policymakers, our representatives, the people who matter as it relates to, you know, like you're saying, defying the FDA, the NIH, CDC, should that barrier of not knowing how to speak up preclude us from showing the strength of the people's desire, of the people's interests, because the pharmaceutical interests are undeniably, extraordinarily loud in the halls of our government and in positions of high influence. So that's why we started Stand for Health Freedom, was to bring people into the fold and give them that voice, remove the barriers to presenting strong, credible messages on their behalf to exercise religious freedom, parental rights, bodily autonomy, freedom of speech, and all of those sorts of things. And I have to agree with you that what we're hearing, sensing, seeing during this time isn't short of, you know, gaining our independence, you know, in the Revolutionary War. That's the cusp that you're talking about that we're on. It's going to take that sort of energy and forward movement and courage to hurdle this and save freedom in America, and to save, quite frankly, the health of America. Because if you thought our health was going in a bad direction before 2020, what has happened to it now? You know, after all of the isolation and fear and dependence on one route to pursue health and drugs. And there's a lot to be recaptured, and there's a lot to be reformed. And the only way that we can do that and harness that extraordinary strength that it requires is to have each other. It's not something that anyone can do for us. You know, I can't do it for you. You cannot harness that strength for me, but it's also not something that we can do alone. We need community. We need God during this time. We need a great awakening for America, or otherwise we're going to wake up one day and be in a place where we never imagined that we would be, and that we would never want for our children and grandchildren to be. So it'll be a good conversation to talk about what it looks like to move forward together, and what it looks like to speak up when you feel like speaking up doesn't make a difference at all.
That's just beautifully said. Let me give an example of Leah's work in terms of, I had an idea and Leah put it into process. I had something I wanted to say, but not just the best opportunity to say it. And it occurred to me, you know, we live in a household, and it relates so much to health freedom, it's just incredible. We live in a household of older folks. The youngster is my wife, Ginger, who at the end of this month is going to be 70. The middle person is myself, who in May will be 85. And the oldest is Ginger's mom, Jean, whom I love. We have a wonderful relationship, whom we invited to live here before COVID, thank God. And she will be 95. And she's a part of our war room, which is Ginger took out a wall, so we have a kitchen living room, and it's a war room now. And she contributes to it. She contributes ideas and humor and appreciation to it. And so we decided that since we are the most vulnerable population in COVID-19, when not nearly as vulnerable as they're telling you. We're about as vulnerable as getting the flu. But there is a vulnerability there. The small percentage of people in our age group, not 30, not 20, not 50, not 10, probably not even 5. And maybe even less, because the CDC fakes its stats. So, but we feel like we are more vulnerable. We actually both think we had the virus in January, and our doctors agree, although we're not showing up with it in the antibodies. We had the horrible dry cough. Our ribs hurt from coughing. We lost, particularly Ginger, completely lost her sense of smell and taste. And that's before we knew that was the single most indicator for this disease. You lose your smell, your taste. And we were the sickest we've ever been. We were sick. So we had great medical care, and we got through without any knowledge about how to treat this disease, just with good medical care. So we decided we didn't want old folks like us to be the excuse for oppressing the American people. I mean, there are actually children walking around afraid to get COVID because they'll kill their mother and father or their grandparents. I hear it in my practice all the time. I see a number, because I'm in Ithaca, New York, I see Cornell students. And they're afraid, you know, they don't want to go home and infect their parents and so on and so forth. And so I wanted to do a declaration that people could sign from around the country saying, don't close down the country to save us. We want our children and the young adults and the working people and everybody who chooses to continue to live in America. Don't use us as an excuse. That's basically what we wanted to get across. And Leah did it. She did a petition for us that people can sign up for on her website, on Stand for Health Freedom. And it automatically gets sent to the local politician of the persons who signed up. And it automatically gets sent to the congressional and Senate representatives, I believe. And that's it. It just goes. And you'll even get to put a little message in privately if you want, of your own, that goes out. And it's the list is not available, the public list of people. We have about eight supporting people who put their names up there, people I know well, and most of them. So that's the kind of work she does. You want to have a voice. You figure out something good that you want to communicate, and you want to get a whole bunch of people to communicate about. That's one of the things that Leah Wilson will do.
Yes, it was fun to work on that project and to give that voice to the people who want it. And we had a good response. You know, thousands of older adults took action on the campaign, and it's still there for people's use. And it says exactly that. Please do not shut down the country on our behalf, those who have been considered the most vulnerable, because we see what that means for the future, you know, and to have that voice coming from the people who have the wisdom and the foresight and have lived through decades more of changes in culture than I have, than many of our representatives have, you know, to hear that from your voice is powerful. And then to hear it from thousands of people echoing that same message to say, this is not being done for us. And it's almost, you know, I wanted them to know too, there is that genuine message of don't use us as an excuse, but there's also that message of don't lie to the people that you're doing this for us, because we're not the ones asking you to do it. You know, we don't want our grandchildren to suffer from separation from some of the most important people in their life. So that email message is customizable, which is powerful too, you know, to put your own story at the front of any email that is going to a representative is important. They want to know the stories, the veracity behind these things, that there is a true need, that there is a problem to be solved. And you have the ability to communicate that to them. This is the problem this creates in my life. This is a problem I see it creating for those in my community. And we're asking you to lift these restrictions. We haven't seen a lot of movement so far, but that doesn't mean that we're going to stop talking, right? That they shouldn't feel the will of the people behind the message and to understand that there's more than one way to look at this. Because if we as the people be quiet, then there's really only one side being heard. And it's not okay for us to allow what we see as destructive to go unopposed. There has to be that counterbalance, that counter voice saying there's a different way to look at this. There's a cost to only looking at it one way. And we want to make you very aware of that. And there can be ramifications in elections to come if there's not a proper response, if there's not, you know, legislation comes up on the matters and they vote in a different manner. And we know exactly what 5,000 people in their district said they didn't want them to vote in that manner. So there's different tools that can be used in that nature. And Dr. Bregan was also helping with another campaign that we just launched this past Wednesday. We did a segment that he mentioned at the beginning of the show today on investigating the CDC, that we, the people, want there to be a formal investigation of specific decisions that the CDC made at the beginning of 2020. And specifically, in order to drive policy, we have to have data, right? The data is what allows policymakers to make decisions when it relates to infectious disease. And the CDC governs those guidelines and passes down what they see as the gold standard for the entire nation. That trickles down to our states, to our counties on the local level. And at the beginning of this, and to the hospital systems, obviously. But at the beginning of this pandemic, at the beginning of 2020, they changed how deaths were to be reported on the death certificates for COVID-19 only. And so we want to know more about that. You know, how do we have comparative data? We all know that in order to analyze decisions, make sure that we're moving forward in the right way, that we like the decision we made this time, should we repeat it next time, we have to have comparative data. And they've stripped us of that by changing in the middle of a pandemic how you report things. How do we compare it to H1N1? How do we compare it to what happened in other countries? If in the middle of a crisis, you switch what we're doing. And part of activism and advocacy is showing that, to be visible and vigilant and vocal. And that's why Stand for Health Freedom exists, is because they're not going to be able to deny that people see what's happening, because they're going to be getting those messages directly to their inbox saying, we see you, and we're being vocal about it, and we want something done about it. And that gives the people the ability to stand together and show how many of us espouse that value of transparency, of accuracy, and of calling out fraud when we smell something that doesn't look right.
What is your favorite project? And then I want to go on to talk about this whole question of finding the courage. That's what I want to now center on. I think you and I talking about that was so different. I'm so much older than you. We both have been through the decision to change our lives, to make a difference in this. We both made drastic changes. Leah, by the way, is an attorney. I mean, she could be doing a lot of other things with her life.
That are a lot more profitable, right?
Yes, I dare say. But I'd be interested to know, would you want to tell the folks about one project that you think is particularly interesting, exciting, important, satisfying?
Yes. I'm super excited about requesting a formal investigation of the CDC.
And we're not that's gonna, pretty exciting.
We're not going to back down from that. You know, we're courting specific members in Congress right now. And you and I should talk offline, because you've been madly successful in getting things done in Congress, which really the bread and butter of health freedom activism is primarily at the local and state level primarily, where those laws and policies are made. However, this is a big deal for our nation. And now we see the local and state level on the heels of an emergency throwing up their hands and saying, we just have to do whatever they say. The CDC has spoken, we're doing what they say. And people abandoning, representatives abandoning local governance is extremely risky. Because when you remove the governing body from the people that far removed, then the people do start to lose their voice and we start to feel even more powerless. And then what does that mean for the relationship between government and the governed? So I'm super excited about the CD launching that campaign for the formal investigation on the CDC. Please check that out. Send those emails, share it with your friends and family who may or may not be aware of what's happening today and who might find some release from fear, you know, just having a transparent conversation about what's really going on and that, you know, voices don't have to be censored or stifled if they disagree with the CDC. It's become comical, you know, that you walk into a store and I have a toddler and some people will want me to mask my toddler. And I just won't do that because there is an innate desire for a toddler's face to be free. You know, he pulls the mask off and I don't want to teach him to ignore that innate desire to get air. And I know that's counterculture right now to even talk about air as it relates to masking. However, if I look at a store manager and say, oh no, he's fine. He's young, he's safe, and we're okay. And they're like, how can you disagree, you know, with the CDC saying two and older has to have their mask on? So it's become interesting to watch how people so willingly shut up and follow. However, I always like to talking about some of the most fulfilling campaigns we've done. And on the state level is primarily where we operate. In New Jersey last year, it feels like an eternity ago now, but the beginning of last year, we were able to support a state organization there with strategic messaging and giving their population a voice and shut down a bill that had every indication that it was going to be passed. And it would have removed tens of thousands of children from New Jersey education because of, you know, prior vaccine injury that doesn't allow them to get vaccinated anymore, but the doctors aren't willing to write medical exemptions. So all these families are claiming religious exemptions, you know, and there is something, you could probably speak to this, Dr. Bregan, there's something deeply spiritual and divine about fulfilling your duty as a mother to say, this is not okay for my child. Like, you know what I mean? That this would not be respectful of my child's life to continue to do what I saw previously harm them or harm their older sibling, which makes me think they're at higher risk. So there was every indication that this bill to remove religious exemptions from vaccination and severely limit the medical exemptions was going to go through in New Jersey. There's 14 pharmaceutical companies out of the top 20 present there in New Jersey. So the lobby is so strong and the energy was so forceful. But we had over 25,000 advocates come together and be sending these messages that they would customize, but had the same core message of this is what we are asking of you. And this is why this is discriminatory. This is more harm than good. And the bill was shut down. And that was
such a great thing,
a huge win in that state, and to be able to cross party lines and to be able to give people who are trapped at home caring for small children or homeschooling or caring for their parents the ability to join in that stand and to say, we are all here, we're not going away, and this is what we need from you as our representatives.
Think about that, folks. I want you to envision it. Here are these executives at Pfizer or Lilly or Upjohn, and I must say I've been involved in lawsuits against all of them. Johnson & Johnson and so on. Imagine that they're sitting there and they're spending millions of dollars to convince a state to enforce their products, like cigarettes or alcohol or cars, their products on children. Now go a step further and think about the fact that children haven't been studied in any of the vaccine studies. That was by wholly against science, wholly against medicine. One of the great men now, Peter McCullough, professor who changed his whole life, a specialty in the relationship between the kidney and the heart, 400 or 500 publications, editorial board of journals. And what he said, I mean, who can hear of such a thing, that you haven't studied something? And in fact, you haven't studied it even to the usual FDA standards. And none of the vaccines have been approved by the FDA. That is not what has happened. They have not gone through the FDA complete system and gained approval. The vaccines have been railroaded through under an emergency act, which allows you to actually give money, taxpayer money, to the drug companies to push through very short, incomplete studies instead of 6 or 8 years, like vaccines would often be studied, you know, a couple months, and to get it approved to go onto the market without any formal FDA approval that it's safe and effective. So all the vaccines are experimental, and that's truth, folks. They are experimental. And other people are pointing out they're not even vaccines, because vaccines are where you give a virus that's killed or a mildly alive virus to the body, and then the body gets a chance to deal with it ahead of time. These injections are changing the RNA of your body in every cell to react to a piece of a chemical that looks something like a piece of the virus, and without ever encountering anything like remotely the virus, it produces a protein that looks remotely like the virus. I mean, listen to this. I mean, it actually is causing your RNA to produce a protein that looks remotely like the virus, so they'll attack the virus. It's crazy making. It's never been done before. So all of that, these men and women sit up there atop, these billionaires running, these billionaires who own these places and own the stocks and so on. And it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre. I came across a piece of information. Oh, I'm going to say this for the first time on the air. We have a new book coming out. And it's called COVID-19 and the Global Predators. The subtitle. Wow.
Everybody, I've heard you talk about the book. I haven't heard the title. That's so good.
Yes. Oh, my God. And everybody goes, wow, or oh, my God, or they'll shut you down or something. And the subtitle is We Are the Prey.
Mm.
So COVID-19 Global and Global Predators, We Are the Prey. It is an extraordinarily scientific book. It's got 3 introductions, short, pithy, marvelous introductions by long-standing physicians working in other fields, and who are now leaders in the righteous path of treatment on the present time. So it's very medical, very medically. And I mean, what I've been learning in doing this book about what goes on is just unbelievable. So what I want to go to now is, maybe I'll start with us and then you can talk about yourself in this regard. You know, I have a lifelong career. I'm the conscience of psychiatry, right? Peter Breggin, on his own, as a spearhead, has been the first psychiatrist to stand up and actually stop widespread lobotomies. I'm the first psychiatrist to ever stand up against electroshock and to stand up against it in court and in my medical books and in my popular books. So I've got this honored position. Kind of lonely, but honored position that I've held for a long, long time, working largely without the support of other physicians. You know, maybe 20 psychiatrists lend their name to our center to show people that we have people on our side, but nobody speaking out, no psychiatrist doing what I'm doing. Some very good ones out there that are doing good work, but they don't, I understand, they don't take on what we've taken on all these years. And we've always felt that that's actually what God wants us to do. I mean, I didn't know anything about that when I first began. Other people say to me, you know, Peter, you're doing God's work. I said, what are you talking about? I'm just angry. They said, no, you're actually very loving. You're very loving. You're doing God's work. I'd say, I'm very loving. You say, oh, yes, you're very loving. I said, oh, okay. I thought I was a really angry young man. I mean, it was like this thing that evolved. And Ginger and I made a decision initially not to get involved with things like vaccines, not to get involved in particular with COVID-19, not to get involved with a whole new place because, first of all, and I think of history for myself and Ginger, that first of all, that history would just say we were kooks, anti-COVID-19 kooks or something, you know. It would take away, and even currently, it would take away from my whole decades of blood, sweat, and tears. And so we didn't do anything in the beginning. And this is about what the wonder is when you once again, no matter how old you are, make a big decision to do what you know is right and what you believe in and what you want to do. And then Ginger found this article, and she got kind of looking into this even more than I was. And she found this article that disclosed that we were actually funding the Chinese research at Wuhan Institute in collaboration with big time researchers at the University of North Carolina building coronaviruses that were pathogenic. We helped the Chinese build SARS-CoV-2. There's just no question about it because we worked with them on the precursors. We worked on SARS-CoV viruses in our labs. And in fact, the work has gone on at North Carolina, and they now have a SARS-CoV virus that causes encephalitis. It'll infect your brain. What happens when that one leaks or the Chinese put it out or whatever? So we thought that was just awful, and we stopped it. We actually, that's when we got busy. I did a video that has 50,000 downloads now. We did blogs, thousands of people reading it, and we got it to at least one person in Trump's inner circle, and 2 days after we did it, Trump canceled the program. So we thought, well, maybe God wants us to do this. That sounds like a pretty good signal. I couldn't hear his voice, but it's like sounds like a good signal. Now, I want to tell you that Joe Biden has now reversed the Trump policy as of the last couple of days. And he is allowing Fauci to once again send money directly to the Wuhan Institute for Animal Research on viruses. Just the whole thing. Now, the Wuhan Institute is under the direct control of the Chinese military. I explain all of this in the book. I hadn't thought I'd talk about the book today, but I decided, today we finally decided to talk about the book, so here we are. It's all in there. The book will be out sometime not long from now, and we'll let you know. But it won't be in a week, but it's going to be not long from now. So we made that decision, and Ginger got a whole new view of life. She said, you know, honey, we were always so proud how God prepared you and me to do reform work as children, literally, as young people, and how he put us together so I wouldn't be so miserable alone and ready to kill myself, in my 40s, being so alone in the world. It's terrible to be alone, and that's part of the hell of COVID-19 practices. It's not the bug. Bug isn't doing anything to us, hardly. It's the practices, folks, the public health practices. And what happened to us was quite amazing. The minute we spoke out, we had a good effect. And then we started meeting people. Imagine, folks, my work in psychiatric reform goes back to college. So that's like 50, 60, 62 or three, 2 years now. I never had a collaborator like Leah Wilson. Never. Now imagine that I know a whole bunch of people. We even have a new physician helping the family through doing this work. I've met new reporters from doing this work. I've met for the first time in my life doctors I really, really admire doing really brave work. That's not what your average doc does, folks. He does what's happening now. They kowtow to the establishment. They've spent so much money getting their degrees and having their businesses and earning their money and being professors. They're not going to do anything that's going to get them, literally, as has happened, thrown out of their professorships, which has happened to COVID-19, honest doctors. Or having their licenses attacked, that's also happened. I don't know anybody's lost one, but maybe. So we just have a whole new world. I am actually, and Ginger and I think we're actually happier in many ways than we've ever been, because what we thought was God's orders to be lonely reformers in the field of psychiatry, to now be fighting for America. And there's a lot of us fighting for America. You're just not going to be alone. They're going to be on every level. Heck, you come up with a good enough project, you just get in touch with Leah Wilson on her website, and you'll be doing something there. So I want to just encourage people, Americans, all of us, Europeans, if you can find one who's, there's a few there standing up on these issues, but mostly they've been utterly cowed by socialism and by the EU, which tries to run all the other countries. Great Britain, no breaking away. So it's a wonderful thing for us. And we have always felt, and I mean, I can't explain this, and I don't, it's not scientific. It's a feeling, a deep feeling. Religion isn't about science. I mean, science can't stand up to religion, and religion can't stand up to science, but religion, spirituality comes closer to the truths that inspired the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. They didn't say on the basis of science, which they had science, they could have, you know, fudged around. There were scientists. Ben Franklin was the greatest scientist of his age. You probably don't know, folks, that Ben Franklin is arguably the greatest scientist of his age. And you're told in school nothing about him, or that maybe he was a doddering old man or something negative. So something wonderful happens at each stage of life where you overcome your terror and commit. It happened to me when I first met Ginger. I was so overwhelmed with how wonderful she was that I ran away and I didn't see her for 10 years. And then I think it was God. How else would we meet in California when I'm out there to give a talk and she's met a friend and the friend says, if you'd like to see Ginger, here's her phone number. I didn't tell her you were in town, but she mentioned your name 10 years later. I mean, how do you explain that? And when I met Ginger, I realized what a coward I had been 10 years earlier. And in 2 hours, I asked her to marry me and she said, yes.
That is amazing. I know I've heard the story before, but that's so good.
I mean, it changed my life. So go with what you think that may be the direction of a spirit of some sort, God. I mean, when we think of God, hardly any of us think of an old man on a cloud. That's a progressive characteristic. We think of a force that has to do with love and life that we can't possibly understand, but which gives us strength and gives us guidance. I think most of us come much nearer to that. And then we may find it expressed in Judaism or expressed in the Catholicism or expressed in Protestantism or even in Buddhism or some other religion. But it's all about that there's a big meaning in this world. And the big meaning has wanted America to survive.
Yes.
George Washington said that his bumbling could never have saved America. He said it was providence. That was his word. He didn't even go to church much. That was his word, providence. So he had a different word. And some of the others had that, but a lot of most people's God. We don't know what his providence was, but we know he prayed. I have over my desk right now a painting of George Washington praying. That doesn't prove he prayed, but we know he prayed. So be brave. Think about what you want, because right now, at least half of America wants to be the friend of anybody who reaches out and says, save America, save freedom, find a way to stand up. I like how I'm talking about this. I've never talked this way before. And it's partly because I'm looking at Leah Wilson. This is inspiring just to see this wonderful person. So that's what I'm going to say for now. And I'd like to hear more from you about your decision with your husband and what you were doing.
And I think that it's so rich to hear you say that at your decision point, whether or not to speak out on what you were seeing with COVID-19, that it was a legacy decision, because people in 30s and 40s and 50s are looking at their licensure and how we protect this, and it's too scary, and they're terrorized by the fact of that. And so if it's not licensure, it's legacy. And if it's not that, it's your job and it's your education or your professorship. And so it's important to realize that we all have points of decision, and the fear will always try to stop us. But those things that are unexplainable and cannot be found in a textbook guide us in a deeper way than we can explain with clear words to each other. But I hesitate to even share my stories with what you have offered the world in terms of courage. And it's amazing that you have been in this fight so alone, but yet all of us who have benefited from your work and have stood on your shoulders through our own activism feel so near to your heart. You know, it's amazing, because through reading your prolific writing, people who I meet who were propelled forward by your writing feel near to you. So that's amazing. And it's so good to be actually connected now. We heard it on Wednesday night from a commissioner in Oregon saying, I get to be on a panel with Dr. Peter Breggin, and he's the one that inspired me to do what I'm doing. So I
that
love
blew
it.
Me away. And I hear it a lot. I actually do. I mean, but
so good.
It blew me away. It gives me chills right now.
Yes. The blessing returns.
I've never thought of, my mind doesn't go to thinking about that. You know, you're so focused. You know, it can be hard, folks. One of the things that Ginger said a couple of days ago to me that was just so astonishing. She said, you know, honey, how I started to tell you this, but I never finished it. She said, honey, how we've always thought that everything about you is suited to what you do. And then God takes you and puts you in a state mental hospital as a college volunteer at the age of 18 because somebody dragged you away from your books. You were studying American history too hard. I wasn't even going to be a doctor. I could be a professor of American history and literature, or maybe a lawyer. And she said, you know, all of that, that wasn't to train you to take on psychiatry. That was to train you to join with COVID-19 revolutionaries.
And the empathy that comes along with it because of your deep understanding of humanity and what we're fighting for. I mean, we're fighting for humanity. Yeah. Yes, the soul of America, the souls of individuals. And at the beginning, I have, you know, my husband has a natural health clinic and a platform here in the Midwest through radio. And then we have our nonprofit, Stand for Health Freedom, that empowers people to take a stand for informed consent as it relates to, in large part, pediatric care, just because of the direction that vaccine recommendations have gone, and removing the requirement for informed consent from that interaction at each individual medical visit. However, so we had those very focused, disciplined missions. And when 2020 came on the scene and the restrictions began, they were so closely and tightly knit to the spirit of the restrictions in natural health and in vaccine decisions that it was inescapable. And so do we blow the boundaries of our mission to speak out on how unjust these restrictions are and how they don't make sense and how there are other ways to pursue health or protect from infectious disease? And it was a resounding yes. And it came with cost. Like you're saying, it came with cost of loss of relationship, loss of people within our nonprofit or within our practice, but it came back tenfold so quickly. And I think it's because people are hungry for connection. They're hungry for truth. They're hungry for something that they can relate to instead of just being told, be quiet and follow. We all need to hunker down and get through this. And now we've been looking at, we're going on, what is it, the third semester now for kiddos? You know, a year and a half of their formal education has been affected by these restrictions. And I always have this vivid, for some reason, I have this vivid memory of me standing in Mrs. Reed's second grade classroom and feeling like a school year was an eternity. You know, I can picture myself as that second grade girl feeling the weight and breadth and length of a school year and taking myself back to that and picturing these kids that are living under these restrictions and how it affects a hunk of their development, you know? And so it's too hard to say, oh, everything is going to be fine. Just keep doing what we're being asked to do. It'll all end up fine eventually, because the writing on the wall is that it's too hard to unravel what has been set forth. And it's going to take some extreme courage, extreme tenacity and energy to undo what has been done. And it's not going to be the decision of the powers that be. It's going to be the decision of society as a collective. And that's not meant in a intimidating or violent way whatsoever. No, we only know that the peaceful protest is the only way that's going to undo this and reaching that critical mass in that peaceful format. However, it's going to take us as a society deciding how we want to step out of this.
It's very well put. And again, I want to emphasize that when you make that decision, you'll actually feel much less alone than you do now. You will just feel so much less alone because there's so many people who want to communicate with you. I mean, I found a newspaper, the first newspaper I found, I didn't even know it existed, Epoch Times. And they start covering my work the way it used to be covered decades ago, all the time, you know, but not once the pharmaceutical industry got so powerful, nobody would dare do a column based on my thinking about anything, you know. And but now this newspaper that I've been working with, and they're catching hell. YouTube is going after them and so on. But I found a newspaper. I found a new medical association I didn't know existed because I started doing this work, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. It's interesting. I'm Jewish, but I'm not. I don't do an observant life. I do a God-oriented life. It's mostly Christian people in that group, and wonderful, wonderful human beings. So I'm just meeting new people everywhere and doing it through this one technology, using this dangerous technologies of communication that we have to really, really, really be with people. Including being probably more, having more influence and enjoyment of my grandchildren than I did before, only because we saw the necessity of being in touch with them because we couldn't go see them. So there's things to take advantage of here and to really, really experience life in a more fulfilling way during a time of stress, because stress can isolate us, and that's what they want. They want us to be distrustful, they are ashamed, guilty, impotent, helpless, docile, and then they'll put the heel on everybody who is a business person, you know, independent business person, independent professional, independent worker or craftsman, independent Christian or Jew. But folks, if you're none of those kinds of folks, they can find you too, because they never stop with going after the enemy, because eventually everybody's their enemy. That's it in Nazi Germany. That's it in communist China. That's it in Russia. It's it in Cuba, wherever this kind of monster takes hold, called socialism, called Marxism. It's a monster. It's killed hundreds of millions of people over its existence. I mean, I bet it's into the hundreds of millions. I mean, you get, you know, China's certainly probably 40 million people been killed under this thing. But anyhow, forget the numbers. Those are from the top of my head. What we want to look at is that you will find a whole new life by reaching out and doing something. You don't feel impotent when you're doing something. You'll start loving again because you'll be meeting people and helping people. And it could be anything. I mean, one project that I've encouraged a friend of mine to do is to set up a volunteer organization to buy phones for people in nursing homes and to build up phone communities for them to talk to other people outside the setting. I thought that would just make people safer. They'd have outside connections. It would help them with their health and their growth. You know, they're staying alive and keeping their cognitive abilities. And that just occurred to me talking on the phone to one of my friends. So this is so much that we can do to reach out into this world. And it will bring you greater joy, greater value. And Leon, I believe you'll be doing God's work because I think God wants this world to be freer.
I do too. I couldn't agree more. And thank you for that. It's interesting, you know, talking about what stops people from standing up or from stepping out and what we hear so often. I love that you get to keep a pulse on the people because you still have patients and we still have, you know, hundreds of patients a week and we have our advocacy base that continually reaches out. So keeping the pulse on people is so important and on what people are facing. And what we hear over and over again is, isn't it too dangerous to step out? And you're thinking, it's too dangerous not to step out. Like the cost of not stepping out today is exponentially greater than what it might be if we do step out, you know, and I don't want to go too grim, but you know, people think, oh, well, if I send an email that has my identifying information on it, then perhaps I'll be put on a list of targets. And if that happens, then we're in bad shape. And that means we should have been stepping out way earlier than we are now. So it's never too late to step out. However, the time is now. And for us to participate and to activate, I mean, we need people participating. And that's as simple as talking, you know, about the conversations you hear between Dr. Bragan and myself or a book that you read of his. Talking to other people about it. Don't keep quiet because silence is a tool of the enemy. And we know that for the people to thrive and for our country to thrive, that the people's voice has to be heard. So I just want to encourage you guys to step out and participate.
Yeah, see if you can think of a petition idea for Leah. How do people most easily get in touch with you, if that's okay?
You can email our main email address at Stand for Health Freedom, which is advocates, that's plural, like the word advocate, but plural, advocates@standforhealthfreedom.com. Or you can message us on the social platforms where you find us, Facebook, Instagram, as long as we're there, of course. So we haven't been kicked off yet, but the email is a trusty way to do that.
We have 3 or 4 minutes. Additional thoughts you'd like to communicate about standing up for health freedom and freedom. I think it's just become just like, you know, for you it was health freedom and me it was psychiatry. Now it's just standing up for freedom as well as the other things we do. So having the courage to stand up for freedom. Any more thoughts about that? I just think it's what it means to be an American.
Yes, and the freedom of thought. And that is the work that we do day in and day out is to give people permission to think, to listen to their intuition, to act on that intuition, search for knowledge to corroborate and bolster that intuition. But there are so many people who are hesitant to disagree with what is going on. And we have to recognize that the same people who are putting forth mandate after mandate to now replace individual healthcare with public health at large are those that put magazine ads out of pregnant women smoking in the 60s and had messages that it's a good thing to smoke while you're pregnant because then you'll have a thin baby and an easy delivery, all while enjoying the taste of cigarettes, you know? And then we find out years later that they're cancer causing and that
and
it's
that
actually...
They knew it.
Exactly. They knew they were cancer causing. They were still putting out the ads, preying on women and babies, the most vulnerable in our society, pregnant women, you know, and the unborn child. And that's the industry that is still putting out these mandates and the public health authorities. That's the same ones that you went up against to squash lobotomy and electric shock and that had forced sterilization. All of those things were considered okay by our public health authorities at one point in history.
They were pushed.
Not even considered just okay, right? So they were encouraged.
Oh, when Hitler started to think about mass sterilization in Germany, his group met with the sterilization people who were doing it en masse in California. They went to Berlin, and Hitler was told, if we can do it in the United States, you can do it here.
And it's heavy to realize that and recognize that these are, you know, the same agencies, authorities, industry that profit then are profiting now off of what's going on. But to give yourself permission to choose your experts in health, your experts in government, your experts based on their track record, not based on what you're told to believe. And our co-founder, Sarah G, likes to call this huge push to just shut up and follow the medical model of chemical health as the only path, the greatest religion, not the greatest, but the largest religion on the planet right now. And he calls it medical monotheism, to say that there's only one way to think about this and you need to just shut up and follow the chemical path to what extent, no matter the cost, because we are told that's the way it should be and that's just the way it is. And so recognizing that religion is powerful, your connection with God is powerful, and that a lot of these belief systems today around the chemical model of health being the only way and that way cannot be questioned is, quite frankly, it mirrors religion because of the way that that belief system is espoused and everything other than that is censored and suppressed as harmful or dangerous. And so it's okay to step out against these things, even though it's counterculture, because it's going to take you and I doing something about it if we ever want it to change. You know, it's not going to change. It will not stop. It will not end unless we unite together and stand as a community for the people's interest and for our children's interests. So I'm super thankful to be with each of you today and with you, Dr. Bregan, of course, and reach out, standforhealthfreedom.com, check out what campaigns we have now and stay in touch so that we can make changes together.
Thank you so much, Leah Wilson.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And let me dare say it, God bless you. Thank you for being in my life and in our lives here in America and the world. Thank you.